So a story that happened within the hour, German voters actually delivered a political favor and a political victory for German Chancellor Angela Merkel, voting to expand the Eurozone's bailout fund as a way of dealing with the sovereign debt crisis. Louise Story of our partner, the New York Times, finance reporter for our partner, the New York Times, joins us once again. Louise, good morning.
Good morning.
So what we're seeing here, let me just throw out a couple of things that have happened this week that really caused me to scratch my head. Number one, Germany has to go along with virtually anything involving money in Europe for anything to work in the Eurozone. So this vote was really, really important. But it's also a matching of domestic politics in Germany with the overall sort of political problem and financial problem in Europe. And yesterday, Barroso, the head of the European Commission, proposed that actually the Eurozone radically transform itself into a much more centralized governmental authority in addition to a sort of banking and finance authority. You've got that suggestion from the European Commission. You've got a victory by Angela Merkel in Germany. Politically, can the Eurozone pull this out in time?
Well, you know, what this is about really is the short term and the long term. And in the short term, what Germany has done and what you're trying to see, what Europe's trying to do is they had an agreement they reached on July 21st that would give more money to Greece and restructure its debt and make the bailout fund bigger. But the thing about European governance is all 17 countries in the Eurozone have to approve it. And it's a really big struggle. So far, 10 have approved it. Germany was a big one. But if the other seven, if one of the parliaments don't pass this thing, it fails. They need unanimity. And so this, you're seeing this in the short term cause a lot of volatility in the markets. The fact that the markets have to wait a couple months to see if all these different governments to agree is really disjointing. And so in the long term, you have a lot of officials like people at the European Commission and at the European Central Bank saying this is no way to govern. And they're saying in the long term, we've got to find a way that we can Eurozone wide make agreements without going home to all the parliaments.
So Barroso says if we had a European central government, we wouldn't have to have these separate votes. They win in Germany, but it's not a victory because as we tick off the countries heading towards 17, as you say, you got to get 17 votes for this to work. The pressure increases. We saw, I think it was 2 weeks ago, they decided to postpone a vote in Austria. Simply postpone a vote in Austria. And there was a market fluctuation of 150
points. Oh, yeah. The market
points.
Is moving on anything these 17 countries say. In fact, one of the big holdouts was Finland. Okay? So Finland is not the biggest economic power in the Eurozone, but they were demanding more collateral behind some of these loans to Greece. They wanted Greece to put up more property and to as kind of a security deposit for the money. And it really threw these negotiations off. There were days and days and days spent on the phone with financial officials in Europe begging Finland to go along with this. And so, again, people around the world, people in China, people in officials in the United States have looked at this and said, this is no way to run an economy. And that's why you have these longer term calls for a new system. But in the short term, they've got to pass this, because if they don't pass this, then they won't be able to give the money to Greece that it needs to pay its debt as it rolls due. And then, therefore, Greece may have to default on its debt.
And in some ways, this is Europe's version of the drama that we seem to be going through every couple of weeks in the U.S. Congress, in the sense that as the deadline approaches, the political power and the opportunity, I mean, the danger grows, but also the political power and opportunity for each individual nation grows. I mean, who would care necessarily what Finland cares about, except for the fact that they're the decisive vote? If it's, you know, 16 countries have voted for this, but one is a holdout, they're suddenly in a huge position of power. And so all of a sudden, each one of these Eurozone countries can step out and be in the sort of front lines and kind of drive the entire Eurozone. And that's almost irresistible, it seems.
Well, and think about, you know, the gridlock we see here in the U.S. Think about that times 17, okay, because that's what you've got in Europe. Now, there are other issues that are going on with this vote that also parallel what we have in the U.S. One is that this vote is really about giving Greece more money, right? But in exchange for that, Greece has had to make all these big cuts in its budget. And, you know, we still have continued protests going on in Athens. So even while the rest of Europe is trying to come together and you've got these parliaments, you know, voting and politicians convincing them to do this to help Greece, within Greece, it's not so popular. And that's actually similar to a lot of the things we've got here in the U.S. with the gridlock for things that aren't popular with people, but, you know, kind of taking tough medicine and
Have you spent any time down on Wall Street with these protesters?
I was there yesterday.
Right.
And you know, it was interesting because they're really concerned about the economy.
Well, your colleague, Nicholas Kulish, yep. had a great piece on the front page yesterday. We actually talked to him yesterday, that there's a growing sense that these democratic institutions aren't really able to deal with these problems. And, you know, we're seeing it in Europe. We're seeing it in the United States. In some sense, are we seeing a failure of a broad level of capitalist institutions, and that suddenly policymakers are going, you know, if this stuff doesn't work, we got to really go back to the drawing board here?
Well, it is an essential struggle over how much do you need the banks to be really strong and profitable for a good economy. There seems to be this tension where we have all these new regulations that have been proposed for the banks to rein them in so they don't take as many risks. But then you've got the bankers saying, whoa, 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 this will slow down our lending. This will hurt the economy. And there does seem to be a struggle on the part of government and regulators to say, okay, we need to make the economy better, but we need to rein the banks in. And so this Wall Street protest gets to the heart of that, okay? Because you've got the people, the protesters sitting there saying, pay the bankers less, rein them in, and then you have bankers literally walking past them kind of saying to themselves, well, you need us, right? Because you need us for the economy. And it's really not clear exactly where the pendulum should stop swinging.
A clash between politics and economics. And the question really is it a Band-Aid fix or is it a fundamental change that's going to have to take place? It's an issue in Europe and here in the United States. Louise Story, thanks as always.
Thank you.
Louise Story, of course, is a Wall Street and finance reporter for our partner, The New York Times. More of the news and your views, go ahead and head to thetakeaway.org. You can listen back to anything you've heard on our program. That's thetakeaway.org. Or you can also follow us on Facebook, find out about stories that have our listeners talking the most. We've got a lot of listeners talking about yesterday's segment on protests. We were just speaking with Louise about how they're happening all over the globe for the same reason, frustrations with the economy, ineffectual government, etc. Rowley posted this on our Facebook page. I think what we are seeing now is a backlash to the unabated worldwide spread of American-style capitalism, not a corruption of democracy. They're protesting the corruption of a system of economics that perpetuates and increases the divide between classes. Though I may sound like it, Rowley posts, I'm no communist, but the governments of the world need to put the brakes on capitalist greed. More of what you think at facebook.com/thetakeaway. Lots of conversations. Be a part of it. Tell us what you think by calling 877-8-MY-TAKE. I'm John Hockenberry. Celeste Headlee is out this week. This is The Takeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.